Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. Today is September 19th, 2018, and my name is Marty Bennett. I'm the president of Social Media and International Education Consulting, and this is our 10th SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. For an archive of the Midweek Roundups in the past 9 weeks, you're welcome to check out our archive here on our Facebook page for SMIE Consulting LLC, or you can check them out on our YouTube channel just launched, similarly named SMIE Consulting, or on our new website, which I'll be sharing the details with you later on. So thank you very much for joining me. Today we're looking at three new topics in international education news this past week. And for those of you who have been in the business for a number of years, this is the time of year when after classes are enrolled and the numbers start happening to come in from different institutions, we start to see the impact of different strategies that institutions have decided to take implement in the past year to see if they've worked. And that's always an interesting time of year to find out what's worked, what's not, and what some of the fallout is from any changes that have occurred on campus. It's really an interesting time, so I encourage you all to share your stories if you have them here on our SMIE Consulting Facebook page as part of this chat, or are happy to bring those up in future conversations that we have with the audience. So today we're going to be covering three topics. These three topics are going to be ones that some of which you've heard of in the past, may have not heard exactly how these ideas were taking shape. And a couple, one policy, one of the topics we'll cover today is more of a holistic view that the PI News is taking on an important topic that certainly is on the minds of students, and that would be post-study work opportunities, and not just in the United States, but around the world. So let's jump right in with our first topic. For those of you who followed the You Are Welcome Here campaign over the years, they made a pitch starting in around NAFSA back in the end of May when they launched their new scholarship initiative, the You Are Welcome Here scholarships. And this was launched by Jessica Sandberg before she left for Eastern Climates in China with Duke Kunshan. And congrats to Jessica for that great move for her as Dean of Admissions there. What this new scholarship program is designed to do was to share with international students who are abroad who are looking at the United States and have questions as to whether or not the United States is still a welcoming place for international students. The campaign has just really mushroomed to over 300-400 schools now that have signed on to be a part of that, either through videos that they've done, content that they've shared on their social media, on the websites, about their commitment to international students. And back when they launched the scholarship drive, encouraging U.S. institutions to begin offering specifically awarded money for You Are Welcome Here. There are several requirements that are part of this scholarship now that that different colleges would have to come up with their own funds, their institutional funds or donated funds to put towards scholarships for international students and call them You Are Welcome Here awards. There is a minimum of 50% tuition that these scholarships would need to have the value of, depending on the institution that's participating. And it's really encouraging now to see that as of this past week, Monday, they made the announcement that there are now 57 American colleges that are now participating in You Are Welcome Here. And I put the link to the article in Inside Higher Ed in the comments section. Certainly, I invite you to check that out. And that also has a follow-on link to the You Are Welcome Here site that lists the full 57 colleges that are participating. So why do I bring this particular topic up for You Are Welcome Here? Really, it's a matter of this topic is one that U.S. institutions, in whatever way, shape, or form they and the way they talk about themselves internationally now, if they haven't already realized it, the world has changed, or the world's view of the United States has changed and is changing, and it hasn't been for the best. But what this campaign began back in November 2016 after the elections and has continued on through the last almost 2 years now since its inception, has really taken an approach of waking up and smelling a coffee, frankly, that the U.S. Is an increasingly competitive global market for international students, and the institutions that decide to participate in this campaign through various means have certainly taken that step and are recognizing, hey, we need to be doing more to make ourselves, not just our country, but ourselves seem more welcoming to international students, and really put a pin in any misconceptions that students have about the reality on the ground at our various institutions. And I think that's been the real challenge, and certainly the colleges that have embraced You Are Welcome Here are living that out in a number of different ways. We've talked in past episodes on Midweek Roundup about examples of what different colleges are doing. Eastern Michigan on the financial and putting their money where their mouth is, and that's certainly one way that speaks louder than words in terms of impact that's going to have in the marketplace. Eastern Michigan University has basically provided their international student applicants who decide to come there in the equivalent of in-state tuition. And that's a huge advantage for international students that are looking at the United States, that is already one of the most top one or two most expensive destination markets for cost of study, from tuition, enrollment, living expenses, books and supplies, health insurance, all of that. U.S. is already one of the top most expensive destinations, and anything that institutions can do to make themselves internationally more attractive financially to these students is certainly something to consider. So kudos to those 57 colleges that have joined this list at You Are Welcome Here. If you're wondering who some of the bigger names are on this list, again, that's on the You Are Welcome Here site, youarewelcomehere.org/scholarships. And the number of schools, again, 57, we've got everything from a couple of schools, or at least one school that I used to work with, Ball State in Indiana. Congrats to the Cards there for signing on to this. Eastern Michigan, George Mason, Illinois College, James Madison, Johnson and Wales, Kent State here in Ohio, Miami University in Ohio, Michigan State, Murray State, Northeastern Ohio University. So schools across the country, from Shoreline College in Shoreline Community College and Seattle University in Washington, to the East Coast, and certainly a number of New England schools that have jumped on board. Western New England University was one of the first that made the original commitment back in May to this scholarship initiative. So we're looking at hopefully a list that is going to grow, and I'm very encouraged by the start. I hope that this list grows for future years, and it becomes a regular staple of what international students have to choose from when they're looking at universities in the United States. So that's the good news. I think one of the colleges over the last decade that has seen some very dramatic ups and downs in their international student enrollments has been Michigan State. If you remember back in the early 2000s, Michigan State was investing heavily in the Chinese market. They were posting huge gains every year on year in the early 2000s and early teens. And what's happened in the last few years, in the last 4 years, it had up until the 2013, Michigan State, with I think next to University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, had the second largest concentration of Chinese students in the United States. with 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 perhaps Chinese students on their campus, and the majority of those were coming in at the undergraduate level. So Michigan State had invested heavily in that. They, for a number of reasons, they don't have the resources that that the flagship University of Michigan has in state, and in terms of funding for to reduce costs for international students, to offset the decrease in state funding to help bring in students to their university. So in the late noughties and early teens, Michigan State was all in on China, and I think at one point the Chinese student population of Michigan State was over a third of their total international population, maybe even 40%. So that's obviously a huge percentage of your international population coming from one country, and at the undergraduate level that percentage was even higher. So I think that's a sign of concern and we've talked about this on the roundup before, that whenever schools are invested overly in one or two or three countries as part of their international student population, you often see any significant political changes or changes in scholarships or changes in other things around the world that have impacts on international student flows can really tank an international a university's international student population fairly quickly. And the article that I posted from a local Michigan station has reports that the international student application numbers at Michigan State are actually down 40% since 2013. And that's significant when you consider consider the size of the international student population at Michigan State, where that institution, as of the last Open Doors count, was certainly in the top 20. It was number 16, I think, on the list, and had well over 7,700 international students. So that in 2016-17. So those numbers are pretty dramatic when you consider a drop in 40% in their applicants from overseas and what that means. The article itself seems to paint it more of the drop being due to political changes and the Trump administration and the travel bans, and it interviews Muslim faculty and Muslim students at Michigan State. But the reality, I think, is where they will have seen the biggest drop is in their Chinese applicants. It's not even mentioned in the article, but knowing some of the folks on the ground there at Michigan State, that's a significant issue. But certain not to disregard the points about the impact of the travel bans and on the public perception of the United States, and certainly the institutions that are trying to recruit students to come here. That is a challenge for all a number of different institutions. So even a larger schools like Michigan State that are huge destinations for international students because of their programs and their reputation are suffering. So it's when the flagships and the larger states schools start to suffer like this, that's going to have consequences. And hopefully that's the political pressure will be applied to prevent the kind of negative rhetoric we've been hearing from continuing, as it hurts the institutions and the economies of the cities and the states that have been previously destinations. And thanks for joining, Laura. Good to have you on for this Facebook live chat, and hope you're doing well. What's with the Michigan State story? One of the things I always like to talk about as an example of institutions that they have also been doing it right in terms of their undergraduate recruitment for a number of years. I've traveled personally with at least two of their staff internationally, and they are well represented around the world and have made considerable inroads in developing markets in Latin America, in Southeast Asia, in India, in China. And that speaks to their commitment to doing international right. And they'll get through this, I'm sure they will. They have, fortunately, have had an increase in their domestic enrollments that have offset some of the international drop-offs, so that's helped them budgetarily. So hopefully they're not in as severe financial straits as some institutions that have overly relied on internationals that have been suffering, whether from the reduction of Saudi scholarship dollars that are coming to their institution, or visa issues that they've experienced in India, Nepal, other other countries that have decimated their international populations. So I really am encouraged by what Michigan State is doing, and they get it. They have some of the brightest minds in international education working there, and establishing that school as a real go-to and one of the top destinations. I'm sure that will continue. So in terms of next steps, the final issue I'd like to cover today is an article that came out on Friday from the Pi News, one of my favorite sources on international ed stories. The Pi News has put together a series, and they're calling this one Act One, of the lore of work rights for international students. And Act One, this article covers policies, government policies around the world that impact post-study work rights for students. And in many countries, previously in Bush and Obama administrations, when the STEM OPT extensions were put into place, this was a sign from an excellent sign from the U.S. government for international students and their parents that the U.S. Did want to invest in work opportunities for students from abroad. And that certainly has paid off. The number of students on OPT, particularly STEM OPT, had grown from 2008 when that was first introduced as a two-year extension on the initial one-year OPT available to all international students on F-1 student visas for each degree level. When that was introduced, there was certainly a spike in interest in 2008 and beyond. Very dramatic uptick in the numbers of international students coming to the United States. Around half of those are now here on STEM degrees, and have access to the STEM OPT work permission. So it's really now a matter of, if in the U.S., responding to a lot of what the Trump administration has proposed, and there are potential limits or restrictions now on OPT, on post OPT work through H-1B opportunities. There's been a real tightening of interpretation on what is possible and a potentially illegal, or certainly there will be legal challenges to some of the things coming down the pike about removal of certain benefits or not allowing Tier 1 salary candidates to be part of the H-1B pool, but that's a different story. So there's a lot of concern in the international ed market as it relates to the United States as to what the future will be. Certainly, students that have been mostly benefiting from post-work OPT, STEM OPT, and eventually H-1B have been students from India. They've represented between 60% and 70% of the H-1B visas that are awarded each year. How many of those, I don't know the exact number of those that are direct from India or coming in through the OPT strand. But certainly that's a concern. But the article itself from the Pi does take the global view on what primarily the Anglophone nations are doing to either attract or not international students to their shores with greater benefits of post-study work opportunities. It profiles what's happening, obviously, in the United States. Similar issues are happening in the UK right now with the Migration Advisory Committee that we discussed last week in the UK has recommended that there not be a new post-study work visa category, the existing regulations should allow for students to continue work. The Universities UK wanted to extend the time that certain degree categories have. I think the recommendation was for PhDs that they would get that extension, but not any others. So it's a real challenge that increasingly, certainly the student surveys that have come out over the last 2 to 3 years that have asked what are the benefits of coming to any particular country, not just the United States, and the potential for employment in country, the potential for experience in their field, working experience in their field and post-study work eligibility in their home countries because of their having attained a degree abroad certainly raises their value. So those are some of the things, and survey after survey seems to back that up, that post-study work opportunity is really one of the things that students are most looking for. So they're not looking just at going abroad for a degree, they're looking at what that degree will mean for them, both either in-country or back home. But more and more they're looking at what that means in-country for wherever they're studying. So I think we're seeing an increase in that, and that's one thing I see governments that are kind of on the bigger picture, macro scale of events that happen that impact world international student mobility. The policies that governments have for work after study really can have a significant difference. We've seen in New Zealand, the country has adopted a very pro post-study work visa, and that's it's a way in some countries to be a more legitimate and straightforward path to citizenship. Certainly in New Zealand, there are concerns with decreasing domestic population growth, and that's the need for a skilled labor force is important in many countries that may be not met by domestic means. So certainly New Zealand's jumped on that bandwagon and being much more generous with their post-study work. Canada likewise also has a very straightforward path that already allows graduates to stay and work for up to 3 years. But now they're also looking at ways in certain provinces within Canada, they're actually making it part a much more blatant path to permanent residency in those provinces. Provinces in Nova Scotia, that for example, in the eastern provinces or northwest provinces that do not have huge population centers and declining birth rates and are going to need skilled labor in those provinces. There are almost incentives built into the system now in Canada to stay after students are done with their work. So it's really fascinating to see how different countries are interpreting what's going on. Thanks for joining, Lou. Hope all's well with you up in Boston, and your neighborhood's recovering from those terrible gas explosions there earlier over the weekend. Really awful stuff, but I'm glad you're okay. I'm sure you're helping out your neighbors as you can. So thanks for joining. We're talking about some post-work study, and really the last part about this that I think the Pi News is going to be continuing this series, and I'm sure they're going to look at more at what some of the student perceptions of different destination countries and how the post-study work opportunities that exist or do not impact their willingness to stay. We've seen some similar things in the U.S. As it relates to China, where actually more Chinese students are returning home now than in larger numbers than they had ever done so before. So I think that's one of those things that you may see more of, because there are better opportunities for them back home than they can get here. Indian students still are probably the international student group that are the most sensitive to these winds of change on post-study work. Any review of news stories in Indian press about U.S. higher education, it's always talking about OPT, STEM OPT, H-1B regulations, because the Indian market has certainly benefited most from those over the years. So really interesting to see where those develop. One last thing I'd leave you with today before we sign off. For those of you who are just finding out about Social Media International Ed Consulting, my company, we've just relaunched our website. I'm very happy to announce that that's gone live as of this past weekend, and I'll pop up the image of that now. The website address is smieconsulting.org, and I'll also put in the website into the comments section here for this site. We've also just launched, in addition to the site, we've launched a couple new features to complement what we're doing here on Facebook. We've launched our Twitter handle, and we're at SMIE Consulting there. And we've also, on the site, you'll see a range of different options from our blogs that we've produced over the past 4 years to presentations, key presentations that we've been involved in the last 4 years, as well as our comprehensive list of our services that we provide at SMIE Consulting, as well as an opportunity to subscribe to a new newsletter, e-newsletter that I'll be launching next week for prospective for international educators around the world that will cover some of these top news stories I cover in depth here. Have a little bit more on my take on those issues and links to those articles in one place that you can subscribe to that e-newsletter. So welcome you to subscribe to the newsletter, visit the site, bookmark it, and hopefully we can be in touch in the coming weeks and months as things develop. So thanks for now, and I wish you all the very best of the day.